This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre, Straight Fire. Tuesday, July 20th. It's a weird day, folks. This is a strange day in sports, and I say that because it's possibly the last real gambling opportunity until the NFL. Now, if you are betting baseball, which I do not recommend, you know, game six could be it for the NBA, and then I'll be firing on some Olympic games, but it's small stuff, nothing big. Then it's basically prepare for the NFL and college football. That's where we are right now. We thought we'd take this opportunity, instead of kind of manufacturing a story or looking for something where there isn't anything, we'd bring in a guest, and he is one of my favorites. Listen, Fran Fraschilla has been all over college basketball, NBA, recruiting, Olympic sports, international basketball. Like, we had him on in November before the NBA draft, and if you guys remember, he was spot on with two rookies who were going to come in and do damage. Both of them outside the top 10, and he was nails on both of them. So I don't think I'm going to waste any of your time. I think we just jump into Fran Fraschilla to break down whether or not Team USA wins gold. Does the U.S. need to change? Do they need to change things for the Olympics and get the NBA players out of here? That's possible. We dive into the draft and some of his favorite players and guys he may or may not love. And then we wrap it up with the tournament. He's announcing the TBT, which has gained so much steam over the last 7 years. It's incredible rise of the tournament. So Fran Fraschilla is great. And after the interview, I'll drop my best bet for game six of the NBA finals. But without further ado, let's get to Fran Fraschilla.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome into Straight Fire a guy you know well if you are a basketball fan in any way, shape, or form. We had him on the podcast back in November ahead of the NBA draft, and he totally nailed a guy, two guys actually, Isaiah Stewart. He called it. He basically said this guy's going to be a steal. Isaiah Stewart ends up second team all rookie. Let's welcome in Fran Fraschilla, the former coach, the analyst, covers the NBA draft, announcer for FIBA games, Olympics. He does it all. Fran, I don't know how you're making the time for us to do the podcast, man, when you're so busy with 15 jobs.
Listen, I'm not, I can make the time. I just got to hope my voice holds out because I'm out here in TBT land in Wichita, Kansas. We'll get into that later. And then I'm leaving Wednesday morning, Jason, for Stamford, Connecticut. For NBC. Thank you, ESPN, for loaning me out. I'm doing a two-hour draft show for Sirius XM after we conclude this. I feel great, and it's my time of year, and very honored to be doing the Olympics. I always love talking hoop with you. By the way, it wasn't just Isaiah Stewart. His teammate in Detroit, we talked about Sadiq Bey last
year. Yes, the Villanova guy. Played with your son, right?
Yeah. And so I have a little inside info, but man, if these people keep missing Villanova guys, it's driving me nuts. So maybe
that's a foreshadowing for later, but yeah, I do want to talk about the tournament as well. TBT, because that thing's fun and exciting. A buddy of mine, Doug Gottlieb, is coaching a team. Yes. They had a great win and then they got smoked in their next game, but we'll get to that later. I thought of Fran, even though he's super busy in summer. So Team USA basketball loses to Nigeria. And then loses to Australia. And the first person I think to text is, I got to get Fran Fraschilla's insight here. Yeah. And I think the text I sent you was, how the hell do you fix this thing? Now, they've righted the ship a little. Yeah. But Fran, Olympics begin this coming weekend.
Right.
There is some skepticism about Team USA. I'm curious as to your thoughts on, A, will they be okay because they were kind of thrown together? And B, ultimately, do they need to fix this and maybe get a better situation in place, because the NBA guys just tossing them together, that doesn't look like it's starting to work anymore.
No, but this is, yeah, I get it. You know, back in 2004, when I really started diving into international basketball, I was embarrassed for our Olympic team. You know, that was the team with all the young guys. I mean, LeBron and Carmelo and D Wade were like first year in the league. And, you know, Allen Iverson was on the team. That Tim Duncan got in foul trouble every game. Mm. And it was embarrassing, you know, the way we played. We finished, I think, third or fourth. I can't even remember. And it's a completely different situation right now, Jason. We just, the NBA has just come off the most difficult time in its history, as we all have with the pandemic. Let me put it in perspective. Nikola Jokic, who's as loyal to Serbia as anybody could ever be to his country. You know, if you know anything about Serbian basketball, it's really their second religion. He didn't play in the qualifying tournament because he had just come off playing 109 regular season games in 10 months. Okay, we're not talking about exhibition games. Remember, the bubble was last summer, and then they had a month off, basically, it seemed like it, and we jumped right back in. So this is a unique time in basketball and our country and the world. For Kevin Durant and Dame Lillard and some of these stars to raise their hand and say, I'm going to play the Olympics, where there's still a COVID situation out there. It's obvious if you get double vaccinated, you may be protected a little, but now we're hearing about people who are getting the virus. Mm-hmm. It's not a sure thing. They're going to Tokyo, where there's going to be no fans. The opening ceremony is going to suck. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I say kudos to these guys. Now, it's just not a normal year. There's not a normal training camp. We didn't normally put together a team. We got three guys who are on the team who are still playing in the NBA Finals. So I'm giving, and by the way, Keldon Johnson, let me just clear this up. Anybody who criticizes Keldon Johnson for being put on a team, I'm going to remind them of the 144 Olympic players going to Tokyo, he's probably in the top 25 or 30. I mean, he's better than everybody. He's better than probably everybody on Japan, even Rui Hachimura. He's better than everybody on Iran. Mm. He'd be the second or third best player on just about every team. So anyway,
that's a good point.
We are in a unique time, and I'm not going to criticize USA basketball because we get the bronze or the silver, because it's just different this year. Now, I guarantee you, when we 3 years from now, and it's only 3 years out, when we go to Paris, we're going to put together a bomb squad. NBA guys are going to want to go to Paris. They're going to want to go to the opening ceremonies. They're going to have a normal season. A lot of those guys will finish in early June or late May, so they'll be rested up for July training camp. So I just think, as a basketball fan, even if you're a fan of American basketball, give these guys a pass this year.
Keldon Johnson, you made some great points. I'm just curious, JaVale McGee, if you are Julius Randle,
right?
Shouldn't you be lobbying to get on this team? He feels to me like the perfect international guy.
Yeah, but I don't think Julius can guard Marc Gasol.
That's a good point.
You know, we only need JaVale for parts of a couple games. Yeah. We only need him against Rudy Gobert a little bit, and maybe Marc Gasol. I watched the game last night, and I know Sergio Scariolo well. By the way, I did the Nigeria game last weekend. I did that game. I was out there. Sergio Scariolo is not going to show his cards last night. There's no strategy out there. You're not going to try to beat the USA in Vegas and have them hyped up for you in Tokyo. So, you know, he probably just rolled the ball out last night. But I guarantee you, when they play USA, they're going to feed Marc Gasol, because it was clear last night that we didn't have anybody who could guard him.
Yeah.
Draymond's not guarding Marc Gasol. That's 7-1 and 6-7.
Yeah.
So my point is, you know, if JaVale's in shape, I've talked to a few people with USA Basketball, and they said he's excited to be there. They only need him parts of a couple games. And he raised his hand, and he's a little bit different than what we – remember. You want me to tell you something crazy? Half of the best centers in the NBA are all born outside the United States.
We realize that looking at the list of centers and their stats, Vucicic, all the guys, basically.
We could spend a whole show talking about the international centers in the NBA. Jokic, Vucevic, Gobert, DeAndre Ayton. So yeah. So in a 12 team Olympic tournament, there's probably a couple guys we have to guard in that center spot, and that would be Rudy and Gasol.
And one of the guys, like Miles Turner, didn't he have a rough go at it last time they did international basketball, him and Plumlee?
Yeah, I mean, you know, God bless Plumlee and Turner. They're good, you know, especially Miles has a chance to be a good player. But those guys, what we think, if you're a Pacer fan, you go, how come we don't have Miles Turner on the team? He's good, but it's not like the world isn't caught up to the guys like this, you know? You know, so, yeah, it's not like he's a difference maker. And no offense to Miles, he's a good NBA player.
Do you think they should just, after Paris, say, you know what, NBA guys, you had a good run. We know it's tough to just mash you guys together against teams that have played together internationally for maybe a decade. We just punt on the NBA players and move on to a better structure?
Let me give you a good, let me give you some inside basketball here. I mean that sincerely. I'm not trying to joke with you. FIBA cares more about the World Championships, FIBA World Championships. Now we call it the World Cup, right?
Right.
2019 China, that was Pop's team, and Tatum got hurt and we couldn't get any stars on the team. So FIBA has downgraded the Olympic basketball. That's why we only have 12 teams in it this year instead of 16. And we got 32 teams in the World Cup. FIBA's about FIFA. They're like FIFA. They want to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
They do. They, that's how it is, you know? And so they put more emphasis on their own event, the FIBA World Cup, we call it now, instead of the Olympics. And in America, what do we care about? We care about the Olympics.
Olympics, yeah.
So it's a different animal.
It looks like the under 19 USA team just did awesome, right?
Yeah, but we're always going to we're going to win that event 9 times out of 10. One year we lost Cal Perry in 17. He tried to put together a Kentucky recruiting all-star team because he was recruiting all these guys. And we wind up losing R.J. Barrett in Canada. In a normal year, I love Cal, you know, but in a normal year, we're going to win the under-19s, okay? But here's the deal. To answer your question, if you said to me, let's have the NBA and USA Basketball really focus on the FIBA World Cup, like in the off years, like the next one I think is in 22.
Yeah.
And make the Olympics an under-23 tournament like they do in soccer, I would be okay with that because FIBA doesn't care about the Olympics. And so that's what I would think of. Now, again, remember, KD wants to be on that medal stand with the gold medal.
Yes.
Olympic. And, you know, Dame Lillard wants to play in the Olympics and Bradley Beal wanted to play in the Olympics. So those guys need to get credit for wanting to play this summer instead of us being criticizing Pop and them for not having a good team.
That's fair. All right, let's move on to the draft, if you don't mind, Fran.
Sure.
NBA draft rapidly approaching. And listen, you are Mr. Big 12, obviously, and everybody and their mom says Cade Cunningham's going number one. Well, we love him. But I just have to ask this, Fran.
Yes.
So when you look at the draft,
yeah,
I look at it less as, hey, man, I see what you are and what you have been. That's outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
But aren't you looking at the draft as what somebody can be? What are they going to be down the road? And that's very difficult to project in the NBA. Yeah. We know in the NFL it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
But from that perspective, is Cade Cunningham still, does he have the highest ceiling of anybody in this draft? Is he still your slam dunk number one pick to go to Detroit?
Well, I don't think he necessarily has the highest ceiling because there's a couple guys, if you tell me 5 years from now, this guy's going to the Hall of Fame and not Cade, I'd say, okay, I get it. I remember when. Jalen Green is a guy that I think is going to end up being Bradley Beal, Dame Lillard, Zach LaVine, 28 points a game. You know, and I think he's the one guy in the draft that could be a generational talent, like a guy that comes along every 10 or 15 years. I have a feeling he may have that kind of, you know, specialness to him.
Yeah.
But I think Cade is the safest number one pick. And in my opinion, it's because number one, I don't see him failing in any way, shape or form. Number two, he's the kind of player that fits in with all systems and styles. Like he can be a playmaking three man. He can be a full-time point guard. I didn't think Luka Doncic could be a full-time point guard, Jason. And I didn't honestly think he was this good. I mean,
no,
I don't think anybody did. I know. I didn't think he was this good is because I had 8-1 and got Luka too. Okay. But Cade is like Luka in many ways. Now, Cade dominated the Big 12 and Luka dominated the EuroLeague. That's the difference. So, Cade hit 350 in the Appalachian League and Luka hit 380 in AAA. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no, that's a great point.
But I do think what I love about Cade, and I have to tell you now, I'm not a Big 12 shill in this regard because Cade's a Dallas kid where I've spent most of my time lately. Cade's in the Big 12, which I know the league better than anybody. But I came in with a skepticism this year about him. Like he had to prove to me that he was worthy of being number one. And what I would tell you about Cade, aside from being 6'7", 220, with a good-looking shooting stroke, is he's got an innate feel for the game, not only as a player who's – he just makes everybody better.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is going to be his key thing. Like Troy Weaver is a friend. He used to work for me at New Mexico as an assistant coach. I can't imagine they're going to trade or they're going to take anybody else. The only way something crazy happens is if somebody offers them like the moon for Cade and the number two or number three pick. So they still get a guy that's a potential superstar.
Right.
But I think when you're building a franchise, you got to have a guy that connects all his teammates to their own strengths. He does that.
You know, you said the high upside of Green. Cade Cunningham, a comparison. Pistons fans like to think Luka Doncic, because he makes everyone better, is a more realistic expectation. And this is not a knock. Chris Middleton, someone who's really, really good, max player.
Yeah. Well, see, Cade is more of a playmaker. Like, when I think of Chris Middleton, and I saw Chris in the Big 12, believe it or not, at Texas A&M. I watched his whole career. No, I think of Chris as a wing scorer. He's a big wing. Obviously, now when you watch him play, he scores at all three levels. And while Cade can score, I think of Cade as, he's not, and this guy's not a playmaker either, but you remember when Brandon Roy was in his prime before the injuries? Cade's got that kind of slow-mo game where he's going to get to where he wants to go and he's still going to get you buckets. But Cade, by far, compared to both of those guys, is a better playmaker as far as moving the ball. Cade is just about a point guard. You can say he's a playmaking wing, but he just is. He's a playmaker. He's a great passer. And he also, I'm a pick and roll fanatic. It's a big part of basketball right now.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of nuance to pick and roll. You have to really attack all five defenders, which is what the best pick and roll players in the world do. And Cade can really destroy pick and roll coverages. And in the NBA, he's going to be doing that a lot. And I think he's going to be really good at it.
Evan Mobley seems to be like the consensus third best, but you know, he could be a unicorn status. Could he not, given the size, the length, he never gets in foul trouble. Somebody pointed out to me that his foul rate was equal to Anthony Davis's when Anthony Davis was at Kentucky. And if you look at the foul rate of like Zion and all these Karl Anthony Towns, it's like not even close. Like, Mobley is just a great, great defender. And we saw it. We know the offense is there too.
Well, remember, see, I look at all these guys from the lens of a coach. If I was an NBA team, I would have at least one former coach, head coach on my scouting staff, because when you and I are discussing these guys, like they do in a draft, like we're doing right now, I would say to you, yeah, he had a high foul rate, but he was playing in his zone.
Oh, you know, that's a good point.
Yeah. His brother's in the middle of the zone. He's on the wing. But to your point, the reality is, statistically, he did have a low foul rate. Yeah. I love the kid. I do. He has to get stronger, physically mature. And there's comparisons. I think I gave it to you in November. Chris Bosh, that hasn't changed.
Yes.
It hasn't changed. I think he's got someone said, well, this kid's a better shot blocker than Chris Bosh. But I went back and checked, and in college, Chris Bosh was an elite shot blocker.
Yeah, people forget that.
So, I mean, you know, college, and he's 6'11", he's going to block shots. I think Evan is safe at 1, 2, or 3, you know? Like, I don't think the Pistons will take him one, but if you say to me 3 years from now, how did you not know Evan Mobley was going to be this good?
Yeah.
I would say to you, well, you know, the same reason I think Ayton is great, but Doncic is a little better. So I don't think there's a lot of complaints about Evan Mobley's long-term potential, except I do want to see him get stronger, and his lower body strength particularly. He's not guarding the three or four or five monsters in the low post in the NBA. There aren't as many as there used to be.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I want to go to the enigmatic Scotty Barnes. This is a guy who is just tantalizing. I mean, the wingspan, the length, he can do every five-tool guy.
Yeah.
The problem is, and Fran, I hate this comparison. I just watched Ben Simmons, a guy I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah.
Really struggle in the playoffs. And the shooting, and, you know, I look at Scotty Barnes, and I'm 27% from three. He doesn't want to shoot the basketball. I mean, you go look at that Michigan NCAA tournament game.
Where was it?
Like Franz Wagner, 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 outplayed him completely. Tell me about Scotty Barnes.
Yeah, and by the way, Franz came up empty against UCLA.
He did. So yes, he did.
We'll get into that in a second. Yeah. But okay, so I'm just going to give you inside stuff here. Okay. First of all, I love Ben Simmons. Now, I think Ben Simmons should have, let me back up for a second. Ben Simmons should have played on the Australian Olympic team.
Yes.
Okay. And I'll tell you why. He's not getting better at his shooting. I don't care if Jerry West spent all summer with him. Okay. He's not. It's just not going to happen at this stage. It's not. And by the way, he's not going to ever have the confidence to take big shots from the perimeter in the NBA. But Ben Simmons is a three-time All-Star in 5 years.
Yeah.
He's already been on the all-defensive team. In his own right, he's still a great player, even though what we saw in the playoffs was abominable, okay? Had Ben gone to play with Australia, in my opinion, he would have been around a culture of people who, A, loved the game, loved their teammates, would have embraced him as an Aussie, even though his nickname is Yank. Okay. His father's American. They call him Yank down under. Okay. Just interesting because he really thinks like an American. And can you imagine this? I want you to imagine this for a second. And hey, Rich Paul, if you're listening in Clutch, listen to this here. If Ben Simmons was playing USA 2 weeks from now for a gold medal, Australia and USA, and they come up short 96-88, and Ben has 23-12-9. For the Aussies, and they get the silver. First time the Aussies ever win an Olympic medal. How good would he feel about his game?
A good point.
And it didn't happen. So that's history. All right, Scotty Barnes. So much to like about Scotty Barnes. The shooting drives me nuts. Okay, it does. And I think it's going to be a factor in his success in the league. I know people who know this kid intimately, and I'm not just talking about Leonard Hamilton and the Florida State people. He played hurt this year. I'm not a huge, huge fan of Scotty because of the shooting.
Yeah.
And I also think his foot speed, everybody says, oh, he's a great defender. I don't think so. I think his lateral quickness is average. Mm. He's not staying in front of, the fastest guards in the league in switch situations. But everybody I talk to about Scotty, they point out that he was injured early in the year, played on a bad ankle all year. They were very ginger with him at Florida State as far as, making sure he stayed healthy all year. So I'm going to cut him some slack because they also tell me he's one of the world's greatest kids.
Okay.
When you look at a 6'9 playmaker who has a good feel for the game, the USA basketball people loved him when he played. And the ankle was something that I think can be said about why we didn't see explosive athleticism. I'm still not sold totally, but I get why people love him. The shooting is going to bother me if he's out there. Draymond was doing the same thing last week when I saw the Nigeria game. He was at the rim. He was rolling in that short, we call it a short roll into the paint where they throw it to him and he passes out. He's not even looking at the basket. He was Ben Simmonsing some plays.
Ben Simmonsing. I think he just made a new term. Oh,
I know, geez. Man. And I don't want Scotty to be that way too. But
yeah.
I'm 50-50 on Scotty, but now I don't think he's going to fail. I just don't know if he's going to be a superstar.
All right. Yeah. I five seems a little rich for my blood, but Orlando likes that type
me
of player.
Too.
All right. Give me a surprise. Somebody who, like your great Sadiq Bey call, like your Isaiah Stewart call. Give me somebody that's not totally on the radar. Who you love.
Okay. So there's one guy in this draft that you could put in a game. You can put in a playoff. You can put in a game tomorrow night. And he wouldn't be flummoxed. And that's Chris Duarte from Oregon.
Oh, I like that.
See, that kid now, here's the negative. He's 24.
So that's not a negative. I hate when people say that. Yeah.
I know. I mean, Malcolm Brogdon, people forget. People don't realize this about Malcolm Brogdon. He broke his leg at Virginia. He was a five-year guy at Virginia.
Yeah.
Which means he also got his master's, which he's going to be governor of Georgia someday, by the way. I don't know that.
Okay.
He's a policy freak, a politics and policy nut. But Chris Duarte is six. He's baby Klay Thompson. He's a two-way player. He can shoot it and create his own shot. He's a relentless defender, and he is how do I put it? Okay, let's go back at Oregon the last few years. They downplayed Dylan Brooks.
That's right.
Mock drafts downplayed Dylan Brooks, and then the NBA teams downplayed him because he went in the second round. They downplayed Chris Boucher, who I'm not even sure was drafted.
That's right. Ooh, and I know Peyton Pritchard.
And for some reason, Oregon guys get that stigma. And by the way, three of the four that we mentioned, they're all Canadians. Now, Chris is a Dominican Republic kid who moved to Canada. But I love him because he's mature, he's tough, he's strong, he can shoot, create, he defends. And I think you can put him in a game right now and he'll be fine. I think he's going to be an instant starter in the league.
I mean, he's somebody who's going to help a team right now. Like if the Warriors keep their pick, if they got him at 14, yes, that's a home run for them, is it not?
I think so. I mean, you know, the Warriors are dealing with a Rubik's Cube here because with 7-14 and guys they want to trade, there's like 80,000 options here. We're turning that Rubik's Cube over 100 times.
Yeah.
But if you said to me with the 14th pick, let's say they trade 7 and Andrew Wiggins for Pascal Siakam. And then they get Duarte at 14. I'm happy with that.
Gosh, that's a slam dunk. Siakam on his way. It sounds like he's on his way out of Toronto. Didn't go well with Nurse. Any other draft nuggets you want to drop? I'm just going to say a name. You don't have to go too long.
No, go ahead. Throw me names because I am locked in. I say that humbly compared more to most, but I've been locked in on Olympic stuff the last three weeks. So go fire away.
Keon Johnson, Tennessee, shatters the record for vertical jump and all that stuff. And everybody now says, oh, he's top 10. I watched this guy multiple times this year, friend. I don't see. I don't know. What am I missing?
All right, so here's what you're missing. Did not play his senior year in high school. Played 1 year with Rick Barnes, my former boss, who is a really good guy. Offensively, the kid, it's not the great system for him because there was a lot of guys that wanted to score this year. Jaden Springer, and not that they were selfish. But this kid was a unique athlete before the 48-inch vertical. I mean, amazing kid. He scored a lot at the rim. When Rick Barnes recruited him 2 years ago, he was so humble because his mom was a great SEC player. When Rick Barnes asked him what position you play, Keon Johnson said, well, I'm a power forward. And Rick said, no, you're a wing. Okay. So what I'm saying is there's a humbleness about the kid. Great work ethic, intense competitor, great athlete. Maybe as good a defender as anybody in this draft, including Davion Mitchell, who I love.
Yeah.
But he's a shade below that at worst. So right off the bat, he's got to work on his outside shooting. But going to the rim off the dribble is good. I think he's going to be pretty good. I don't have a problem taking him in the top 10.
I know you love international ball. I don't know if you heard. I'm part owner of a basketball team in the NBL, the New Zealand Breakers. I know this guy well because he's dominated the league, despite modest stats. Josh Giddey. A really nice player, man. He is. I feel like he's the perfect Spurs player.
You know, I think he's going to be the perfect. I think he's perfect in from this regard. If you know him, he makes everybody better.
Yeah.
And he's got some toughness. When you don't, it's not the assist. It's not being a 6'8 point guard. It's just he's a good rebounder, good nose for the ball. His shooting's got to get a little bit better. But that league is full of men. It's a tough physical league. He's also a late bloomer. We knew about Ben Simmons at 15.
Yeah.
To do what he did in the NBL this year against men every night for like 30 or 40 games, tremendous. I don't know if he's going to be an all-star.
Yeah,
I think he'll be in time, not right away, but in time, he'll be a solid starter in the league. Makes everybody better around.
Yep. Two more. Miles McBride, West Virginia, seems to be. I text a bunch of people about the draft, and a lot of people really, really like McBride. It seems like he might be a top 20 pick now.
You know, I talked to a team last night about him forever. Again, because I watch him so much and I spent 8 years in Ohio. I know Cincinnati Mower High School, like the back of my hand. The coaches are there from 25 years ago and you can't let's go off the court intangibles. There's not one single negative you can find on the kid. He's tough. He proves a high school quarterback. Dad played at Xavier. I think he's going to be a good NBA player, not a great one. I think he's going to be a great off the bench scorer. I'm not sure he can be a starter on a bad team, but I think ultimately he's going to be in the league 12 years and help teams win playoff games. more off the bench than on. He's not a pure point guard. He doesn't have the size of a two guard at 6'2". He's a big shot maker. His range has improved. He's a good, not great defender, but the intangibles all add up, and you just don't see him failing.
It feels like a smaller version of Pat Connaughton, maybe, the Notre Dame guy?
That's a great call. That is okay. A freaking great call.
Well, all right, good, good. I'll take it.
I love that call. I haven't thought about that. If I steal it, I'm going to give you credit.
Permission granted. All right, final guy. And this is, you know, this is kind of a tough one because I just don't know what to make of him. Late riser. Small guy, but if you squint, you can see Allen Iverson. Bones Sharif Highland Cooper. Out of VCU.
Sharif Cooper.
Oh, Sharif Cooper. I was going to say Bones Highland, but let's do Sharif Cooper.
Bones Highland. Okay, all right, Bones Highland.
Okay.
No, I see Bones Highland as being a combine wonder.
Oh, okay.
And Bones had a good year. Bones is going to play in the league, but I see Bones in his best case scenario. And this is not even fair to Bones because he's not as good as Lou Williams or Jamal Crawford. But I see him in the style of a Jamal Crawford. He can do a few things really well, including get his own shot, which is a skill. But I see him as an off the bench second unit scorer. You know, good athlete, not a great athlete, good athlete. His best strength is getting to the rim and making plays at 6'3", finishing over bigs. And again, I don't have a quarrel with him going in the late first round. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I see him, if you can give me 75% of Jamal Crawford's ability, I'll take it every night. Because Jamal is, it's crazy to say this, in some ways he should get some Hall of Fame votes for the long career he had as one of the best six men ever.
Longevity matters. All right, I want to talk about the tournament, TBT.
Yes.
So, Fran, you're calling games. When it first came out, I think it was what, like 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago? Yeah. I was in Pennsylvania, and I was so excited because I was playing pickup basketball. I was in multiple leagues. And I was like, oh, my gosh, maybe we should have a JMU team, and I could maybe be like the 10th guy off the bench. And that would be so fun to compete at a high level against these awesome players. Fast forward to 2021. You got a bunch of former NBA guys in here. This is like an amazing talent pool that they've got, and this tournament is loaded. I mean, Fran, this is great summer basketball.
It's 64 teams this year. We're back to 64. Last year it was 24 because of the pandemic, and I've been a part of this for 7 years. And unfortunately for me, I'm going to the Olympics Wednesday, and Seth Greenberg will do a great job on the final eight. And you know, it's amazing because number one, it's winner take all. There's no like consolation prizes. So as we build up to the finals, and last year Marquette's alumni won it, fittingly on a Travis Diener, who was just player, on a Travis Diener 3, even though he's 37 and just finished a great career overseas, 5 years in the NBA as well. But the level of play is so good. 80% of the guys in this league are still playing overseas.
Jeez.
Everywhere. Estonia. Some guys are playing Tyrus McGee, who was a sixth man of the year in the Big 12, he's going to the ACB this year. He's a really good player. There's so many good players playing around the world. Last year, in only a 24-team field, we had 50 former NBA players. I'm going to read off the list of one of the top 10 teams, Eberline Drive, okay?
Okay.
So let's go. Archie Goodwin, first-round pick.
Yeah.
Devin Robinson, Washington Wizards for 3 years. Jeremy Evans, 7 years. This is one team.
I think he won a dunk contest.
He won a dunk contest 7 years in the league. Marcus Teague, first round pick of the Bulls. Okay. Trevelyan Queen, second round pick last year, who was in the G League, who was going to play in the NBA. He's a kid out of New Mexico State. Remember that name, Trevelyan Queen. Nick Mayo, who's one of the all-time – Nick Mayo played at Eastern Kentucky, okay? This kid scored 2,400 college points. He's 145th all-time in NCAA history in scoring. He's 6'9". He's only 24 years old. He just signed a big deal in Japan for like nearly seven figures.
Jeez.
He's an NBA player.
So, but Fran, what's the connection? How are these guys all on the same team? It's a
great connection. 30 of the 64 teams roughly are alumni teams.
Ah.
But a lot of these other teams, like the LA Cheaters got beat last night. Made up of guys from the Drew League.
Oh, goodness.
Casper Ware, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, his team. And And the team, Sean Marshall's Challenge ALS, coached by Darren Collison, by the way. You know, they're key guys. What's his name? Harris, played at Fresno State, you know, playing overseas, making a lot of money, like NBA players, or every close to NBA, like just below. So what happens is a lot of these guys have grown up with each other or played together or played against each other, or their agent is the same agent. And so there's a lot of connections. A lot of things go full circle. Here's what I'll tell you, because I don't want to bore you with this. For summer basketball, when we get to the Elite Eight, we don't call it the Elite Eight, but you know, you get to the last eight teams. When we do the final and it's two really good teams, by the way, I said this to you off the air, at least six of these teams can win a G League title. Okay, that's how good the level is.
Stacked.
And by the way, because they all play professionally overseas, they all know how to play pro basketball.
Yes, team basketball.
They know how to play. They
would smoke. They would probably smoke some G League teams, which are wanting to get to the league. Let me show you my handle and all. Yeah.
Totally. Like you're playing against 28-year-olds who play in high level systems around the world. Yeah. All right. Last thing, when you watch it, I think it's August 3rd. When you put on the final, every single possession of the final game for two teams playing for $1 million, winner take all. Every single possession is life and death. And the coolest thing about it is we have the top officials doing top college Final Four officials, and there's no fights. It's high level intensity, but because these guys are pros, man, they play their hearts out.
Yeah.
And you know, they're all respectful of each other. It's amazing basketball.
Winner take all. That's good. Listen, it's a great tournament. Obviously we love you calling it. Enjoy the Olympics, NBA draft. Listen, this is a big couple weeks here of hoop, right? In the US, internationally, like it's a big one.
How about this? Who thought we'd have an NBA final in late July?
Yeah, that's another thing. I forgot about the NBA. We didn't even touch on that. Suns, forget it. Anyways, all right, Fran Fraschilla. Hey, man, you're super busy. Thanks for taking the time. And, we'd love to have you back whenever.
Hey, Jason, it's always a pleasure. I love talking ball with you.
The only thing better than sitting on your couch watching the game is making money while you do it. Here's your best bet.
Just tremendous stuff from my guy, Fran Fraschilla. I really respect his basketball opinion. There's a lot of people who love the draft and are passionate about it. I consider myself one of them. Fran is definitely one of them. So when he speaks, I listen. I love his stuff. All right, let's quickly get to my best bet for Game 6 of the NBA Finals. You guys, I'm sure you've been following my picks on Fox Sports. Remember, super hot fire in the bubble last year. Very lucrative. I think I had 58.7%. It was a great run. And I was struggling to tread water for much of these playoffs. I got hot in the conference finals and early NBA finals. Games 4 and 5 have just kicked my butt. Just a brutal back-to-back stretch. Game 4 is what really messed with my head. The Suns had it. They had the game. And they blew it at the end. And then, of course, Game 5, just unbelievable offense, unbelievable shooting. And I'll give you some of my leans here. Again, subject to change, you know. Leading up to tip-off, my official bets will be on the Fox Sports social handles for the association later today. But I've got to go with the Bucks. I know they're favored by 5. I just don't know how you bounce back from the gut punch that has been the last two games of your Phoenix. I know they're going to give it their all, but they're going into a hornet's nest. I mean, the scene today in Milwaukee, like hours before the game, is going to be chaos. What do they call that? The Deer Lake District or whatever? It's going to be popping. I have to take the Bucks favored by 5. If you guys do follow me on the gram, you saw my stories. Way back in May, after the play-in games, I gamble all the time with these two buddies who I used to write with at the Big Lead. You know, we have a text chain for the NBA playoffs every night. What are you looking at? And they said, man, why not the Bucks? And they said, man, why not the Bucks winning the title? And they were plus 925. Remember, it was all about the Nets and Sixers before the playoffs. Okay? Harden was healthy. Kyrie was healthy. Bucks were an afterthought. So I took a small bite. I wish it was a bigger bite. Oh, my gosh. Would have been really nice to hit plus 925. So the Bucks win. Your boy wins. Should I hedge with the Suns? It's not that big of enough a bet to matter. If we're talking, if it was a five-figure bet, certainly, yes, I would hedge. But I think the Bucks win. I would not be surprised by a low-scoring game total at 222. And then two props. Listen, this is going to fly in the face of conventional wisdom. Earlier in the series, Giannis had back-to-back 40-point games, right? So everybody says, oh, Giannis, geez, wow, you got to keep betting the over. They can't stop him. He's on a tear. He's Shaq or whatever everybody was saying. So what happened after Giannis's back-to-back 40-point games? He fell back to earth with 26 under and 32 in game five. I think his total was 33.5, I think. So under and two straight for Giannis. Does he flip back and go over in game seven in the closeout? I think I'm going to pass on that. Listen, I've been wrong on Giannis the last two games. Now, this is a hold-your-nose bet, but there's been nobody hotter than Devin Booker the last two games. He, since that clunker in game three, has been unbelievable, going for 42 and 40 in the last two games. His player prop total is up to 31. That is super high. It was like 27 earlier in the series. One could say Devin Booker overvalued. Now, when you go for 42 and 40, listen, you're going to have to raise it. I would look at the under on Devin Booker. That's a tough one. That's a hold-your-nose play because D-Book is great. I will say this. Blowout is in play. We have seen blowouts when teams come home to close it out. We've seen blowouts. So I would not be shocked if the Suns got their doors blown off here. I think I like the Bucks. I like Booker under. And that's pretty much it. I would lean to the game under 222. But listen, this is a tough one, and it's going to be a rough night if the Bucks win and close it out. You know, we can only get to the draft and free agency soon enough. But from a gambling perspective, it's get ready for football. We'll talk to you tomorrow.